Okay, let's not let that bumper music drive that last message from your minds. PowerModel.com, great place, great products, unique products. Definitely a place to go do your shopping. I'm Pete Hendrickson. I'm guest hosting this second hour of the Power Hour today, and I want to re-greet those of, or greet the people who are just now tuning in, as I did at the top of the first hour, with a wonderful quote from James Madison that speaks to me when I think of the title of this show, The Power Hour. Madison said, "Knowledge will forever govern ignorance, and the people who mean to be their own governors must arm themselves with the power which knowledge gives." So good morning again, power people, because that's what you are. You're here getting power. And again, a belated Happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there in the audience. You are the most important people out there, and I hope that your day yesterday was a wonderful one. So I'm talking with Shane Trejo, journalist in Michigan, who was also a political activist, who was involved considerably in the activities in the vote counts in Wayne County, Michigan, in November 2020, a time in which Donald Trump was the clear front runner at the end of counting on Election Day. At 10:30, when the election counting inexplicably was halted until the next morning, when it was announced that lo and behold, in the dead of night, Joe Biden had actually won the state, won the county dramatically, and won the state of Michigan by 150,000 votes or so, something that had not that no one had been expecting when vote counting was stopped on Election Day itself. So, Shane, you were recounting your observations and experiences in that vote counting procedure, including having seen ballots brought into the TFC, the chief counting location in Wayne County, at 3:30 in the morning, after everyone was supposedly gone home or been told to go home because counting is over for the day, just as was done in Atlanta, Georgia, where people were all broomed out of the counting facility. Under the statement that counting was over for the day and would not resume until the next day. And then a videotape revealed that as soon as the room was cleared, the several Democrat poll workers that had remained hauled cases full of ballots out from underneath tables where they had been concealed by the table skirting and began running them through the tabulation machines at a furious pace. Pretty clear evidence in my mind of vote fraud that was taking place, and the arrival of a van full of ballots in Detroit at 3:30 in the morning, also caught on videotape as it turns out, was an indication of the same thing going on in Detroit, one of the other battleground states in which, in about five locations of which the chief urban center of the state had an unexpected eruption of Biden votes in the wee hours of the morning, the day after Election Day, and the election turned declaredly for Joe Biden. So please continue your story, Shane.
Yes, so they showed up with the tens of thousands of ballots at the dead of night. Everyone who was there, all the poll workers and poll challengers, all the people who were trained, were completely disenfranchised. They weren't able to do their jobs. So after the ballots came in, they're like, shift is over. Everyone out, so everyone is ushered out of the TCF Center. I'm at the end of my shift. Some people, they did like a hero shift, a hero double shift, and stayed there, you know, throughout the day that day. I did not. I left at that point. I put out an APB to every person that I could that this is it's going down. We need people down there. We need people to just show up at TCF to try to stop this vote steal from taking place. So we did get the word out. Others were alerting people too. So the next day, tons of people flood there to try to get some eyes on this process. It's my opinion that they hope that because typically at that 5:30 a.m. At every year, that's when things are done. That's when things typically come to an end. So I think they realized that we were going to have people trained, we're going to have people ready until that night was through, and then they were, I think, hoping to slip through these ballots without much consideration, without much observation, without any challengers or many challengers being there to do much about it. However, we were able to get the word out, and tons of people flood there. So then this is when the people in Detroit did a Gestapo operation of sorts to get poll challengers out of the facility. So what they did was they had their, you know, thugs go around, mask police. If you weren't wearing the mask up to their considerations, you'd be ushered out.
You mean
be
if it
out.
Wasn't over your nose sufficiently,
yeah,
or not up to your eyeballs,
yeah,
the way they wanted it to be?
If it wasn't up to your eyeballs,
some pretext.
Yeah, they would, yeah, some pretext to get you out of there. So if you weren't wearing the mask up to their standards, you were gone. You know, people were, you know, being harassed by Democrats, and then if they went to authorities to try to complain, they would get ushered out. So just the worst type of abuse that you could imagine.
Wasn't there a point at which the everyone supposedly was getting a food break and left in the belief that this was a legitimate good faith break for taking food, and then the Republican poll watchers weren't allowed back in again afterwards.
Exactly. Yeah, there was stuff like that. I mean, you could not get out to go and urinate. And if you did, if you left the facility to go urinate, they wouldn't let you back in. So this was an insane third world style vote heist, in my opinion. And then when people were standing by the door, by the windows, who had been disenfranchised, they actually came up and boarded up the windows at one point. You know, so they literally covered it up. They were caught on video covering it up. And of course, there were some bureaucrats with the state. I think it was DHHS bureaucrats who showed up and said, "Well, it's COVID. COVID is making us do this because we can't have more than X amount of people in this facility." However, I'd like to mention that there were like three or four giant facilities there, and only one was being used. So they could have easily spread things out in a couple of these different, or three of these facilities. There was tons of room. It was not a public health situation at all. It was just used as a pretense. And the reporting that we did beforehand with the Detroit leaks showed the blueprint ahead of time. So it really demonstrates that there was, you know, that this was planned, that this was a conspiracy, that many people were in on it. And I would like to know, we've talked about the Democrats, let's talk about what the Republicans did in the aftermath. So in the aftermath, literally hundreds of people witnessed this fraud, witnessed this heist happen, and they went and signed affidavits so that, you know, they could potentially go to court and be brought up as witnesses. So many people were wanting to get the word out about this, desperate to tell the truth about what happened. So what happens? The Republicans, you know, bring in lawyers from out of state to take these affidavits. Now, what happened with these affidavits? As far as I know, they were covered up. The Michigan legislature in our state, you know, in certain states, they got Democrat legislatures. We don't. We have a Republican legislature. They did nothing. They dragged their feet. They could have brought up, they could have subpoenaed all the people in Detroit who did the operation, from city clerk Janice Winfrey to elections official, former elections official Chris Thomas, who was on Winfrey's payroll, down to the people who were on the floor. There was it's been alleged that a Dominion official was actually on the floor in Detroit overseeing the entire operation.
That being Dominion voting systems, the people who ran the voting machines or who provided the voting machines that were used in most of the counties in Michigan, and particularly in Wayne County. Is that correct?
Exactly. And Democrats brokered the deal to bring Dominion into Michigan, one of their their elections, one of their top elections officials in the state was on Dominion's payroll. So, but again, I don't want to say the Republicans didn't have a hand in it, because it was ultimately approved by Governor Rick Snyder to bring Dominion in here, after 2016.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's plenty of blame to go around from the Democrats perpetrating this to the Republicans looking the other way. In my opinion, a lot of Republicans were actually in on this because they wanted Trump to go away. The actual hearings that we pushed for, we finally had hearings, you know, a month later when we needed them, a week after the election. They come way after, and they only gave us 3 minutes of time to even say our story. We couldn't, and a lot of people were getting badgered by Republicans like Senator McBroom or Representative Stephen Johnson. They were getting badgered by Republicans just trying to share their story to the House and Senate.
Yeah, and I want to say this whole subject area sounds a little odd right now to many ears, I'm sure. Excuse me. Because the subject of the election of 2020 has been pushed off the agenda for news, for activists, even for activists who consider the election to have been fraudulent. Most of them have just stopped talking about it. And this is a consequence of this monolithic media suppression campaign, somewhat a matter of the suppression campaign that has been engaged in by people like the Facebook officials and Twitter and so forth, kind of mainstream social media. They've done everything possible to shut this stuff down, to embarrass people who raise the issues. And, of course, the mainstream media, CNN and the New York Times and Washington Post and MSNBC and all the rest, have spent from November 4th until whenever it seemed like enough had been done, were simply reciting this mantra level, there was no fraud thing, or there's no evidence of fraud, or anything that's necessary to have said, just nothing to see here, folks, just move along. As the tumult of the mugging, you know, quieted down and it became nothing but bodies laying in the alley. I don't like that. And I have not been pleased with the way that has gone. The theft of an election, you know, it's not something that has never happened before. Typically in the past, the occasions of which I'm familiar, you know, it's argued that Jack Kennedy, you know, squeaked out a victory over Richard Nixon in 1960 by virtue of election fraud committed by LBJ and his operatives in places where he had influence. But it was in that situation, it was by a very, very, very narrow sliver of differential. Here, I think the differential was very considerable. And I think that if the evidence actually were aired completely, it would be proven that the differential was very considerable. But even a sliver of differential is important. Today we have a situation where, unlike 1960, where it would have been very, very difficult to marshal the evidence to show it, we are in an internet age where that evidence is already in hand. It's as we were saying earlier in this discussion, there are a lot of videotapes of fraudulent activity taking place, which is unambiguous fraudulent activity. It's not like it's, well, we can't really tell what's going on here. We absolutely know what's going on here. We saw the people pulling the suitcases full of ballots out from under table skirting in the Georgia tabulation rooms after having sent all the poll observers out of the building and telling them everything was done for the day. This is not ambiguous at all. This is very straightforward. And in that particular case, there was a little lie being used as well, if I remember correctly. Some story was floated about a pipe having burst in the election counting facility, and that was why everything was going to be stopped right then and everyone had to go. And that was a complete fabrication, as was revealed soon afterwards. Not that it would have mattered, because pipe burst or not, those suitcases full of ballots got pulled out from under those table skirtings and began being counted by Democratic operatives after all the Republicans were exited the room. So there absolutely was election fraud. Whether it was sufficient to have, you know, changed the outcome of the election, I think that logic says it absolutely was. In some cases, in Wisconsin, there was only a 10,000 vote differential. Granted, that's only one state, and the argument will be made by defenders of the current status quo that, well, just if it was just Wisconsin churned, that wouldn't be enough. But that's just one example. and all the rest of them, you know, what Shane was talking about, what happened in Detroit, which turned the election in Michigan. There's another one. Wisconsin and Michigan both turned. What would that do? If Wisconsin, Michigan, and Georgia all turned, or Arizona, which is currently in, as I said last hour, in Maricopa County, those election results are being audited. The Biden Justice Department is making noises about interfering with that audit process, whether for good reasons or bad. But this is a very, very serious business. I had a meme show up on my in my email today from another activist, and I really appreciated it. It was a circle, all red except for one little line of black on it, and the key to the thing was the red, which was 99.9% of the circle, was how much I worry about the security of my constitutional rights, and the one little line that was, you know, 0.001% of the thing was how much I worry about COVID-19. I mean, that's a reality. You have to make your choices here in a rational way. And, you know, as Shane was saying, the COVID-19 thing was used to hinder the proper observation and validation of the election results that were being tabulated at the TCF Center in Wayne County, Detroit, or Wayne County, Michigan, on November 4th. And that excuse just does not cut any mustard at all. The security of our elections, the security of our rule of law, is far, far more important than any danger of COVID-19. And the very idea that the threat of COVID-19 would be successfully used to thwart the security of our election is just outrageous. It's outrageous, and it ought to outrage everyone. So the election thing should not have gone off the radar screens. It should not be off the agendas of the American people. It should be very much on the agendas of the American people. It is not a resolved question unless it is considered resolved on the side of there was election fraud and it was meaningful and it matters. Now, you know, the thing I shared with you earlier about what's going on in Maricopa County and the statement by State Senator Wendy Rogers about imprisoning Justice Department officials if they come into Arizona and try and hamper the audit of Maricopa County, that kind of goes to the same thing. This is going on still. It's just going on under the radar screen. It's going on quietly. It needs to be going on more overtly. There was an episode of Tucker Carlson I saw a week ago or so in which he got a lot of heat for, in which he was making the point that the proper Americans ought to be reclaiming the high ground of pointing the finger at morons walking around with masks on their faces outdoors, particularly outdoors. But especially now, you know, a vaccine is supposedly available, whether it's a good vaccine or not a good vaccine, it's claimed to be a good vaccine. And that being the case, there is absolutely no excuse for there to be any kind of shutdown of any kind, much less wearing masks indoors or groups of vaccinated people wearing masks when they're together with each other, or frankly, vaccinated people wearing masks even when they're not with unvaccinated people because they're at no risk at all. Anybody who feels unsafe because of the COVID situation can get vaccinated right now. Anybody can. And so there is absolutely no reason for any restrictions to be being imposed or honored by any American at all, anywhere. We should be back to normal. We should have been back to normal in February on the basis just of the availability of a quote-unquote vaccine, you know, the 97% effective vaccine. So as Carlson said at that time, the sensible Americans, people who understand these issues and understand what's important, they understand that meme that I was describing where, you know, 99.9% my constitutional liberties are more important than my fear of COVID-19. Anyone who understands these things needs to become, they need to reverse, they need to turn the worm. Right now, or what has been the case for the last year, if you're outside and you're not wearing a mask, you're likely, at least possible, or even if you're inside and not wearing a mask, you're likely or possible to be accosted by somebody, some masked, fear-consumed person who's going to yell at you, don't you know there's a virus going around? It should be the other way around. Those of us that see people walking around, you know, on a street or driving in their cars, for goodness sake, wearing a mask, should be being laughed at least, if not told, don't you know you look like an idiot? And the same thing about the election. People who want to broom that out of sight and just kind of move on should be being told, no, this is more important than comedy and the fiction of unity, which, you know, supposedly Joe Biden is the unifying administration. There's no unity going on. There's nothing but divisiveness going on. If the only unity that Joe Biden is proposing is the unity of everyone else coming to agree with the positions of his supporters and nothing else. That's not unity. So this is important, and that's the reason this is being brought up. And it may be the first time that many of you that are listening out there have heard the subject of the election raised in the last several months, because it has gone that dark on this subject. But this is a big and important subject. So, Shane, we've only got a couple more minutes to go on with this. Is there anything else that you would care to share on this subject?
I would just like to, even though we've, talked about the problems within the Republican Party, I would recommend people getting involved at the local levels, finding people in the Republican Party, because there's a huge chasm between what the Republican Party politicians, most like the vast majority of whom are establishment, and what the actual constituents believe. The average constituent might not get it on every issue, but they understand that COVID is a lie, that their election was stolen, that what's going on with Black Lives Matter, burning whole cities to the ground, that this is bad, that we have to organize against this for our liberty. And, as someone who's been involved with the GOP since the Tea Party and Ron Paul days, back then we probably peaked at 30-40% of the party in terms of constituents who stood for liberty. I would say we have between 60-70% of the constituents now who, know that, this COVID stuff's bad, know that, the democracy as it is told to us by Biden and by the establishment is a total scam. So get involved with your local GOP. Check out Republicans for National Renewal at rnrenewal.org and get involved.
All right, Shane, thank you very much. We'll be back after the break, folks. Don't go anywhere.
What in the world is this crazy Willard water?
It's a proprietary solution, and it's a water additive that was invented by my grandfather, Dr. John Willard, and hence the name Willard Water. Boosts a number of different things. We see most prominently that it's increasing the absorption, utilization, and storage of nutrients in the cells. So, for example, if people were drinking, we see a big boost in B vitamin absorption utilization. If you see it in plants, we see a big boost in their ability to absorb and retain fertilizers or nutrients in the soil. So we see with things like microbes. If you used a microbe on soil, for example, to replenish the soil, and you sprayed our Willard water on it, go through that replenishing cycle much faster.
Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at theparamall.com. That's theparamall.com.
If you eat your mammoth food on a semi-regular basis, you're probably getting better quality food and healthier for your body than you're eating now.
Your products are GMO-free. There's no added MSG and no chemical preservatives or high fructose corn syrup. And you also have gluten-free products as well.
We have a great variety of very high quality products.
Call 1-877-817-9829 right now and buy from the good guys at theparamall.com. That's theparamall.com.
My husband is a welder by trade, but he grinds his welding products, and he doesn't wear a helmet or a mask to do that. And he had this cruddy stuff in his lungs, and it just wasn't going away. And I heard you one time talking about the Sarah enzyme for the lungs. And my goodness, I mean, he can breathe so much easier. And I don't hear that crud in his lungs. Thank you so very much.
To find out more about this product or others like it, go to our website at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. Call 877-817-9829. That number again is 877-817-9829. Jay's standing by to take your call. Now more than ever, we need your support. Buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
The Power Hour has been in existence since the turn of the 21st century. It is more critical than ever for you to sign up for our free newsletter and our breaking news. Simply text the word Power Hour to 22828 on your mobile phone or sign up when you visit thepowerhour.com. Our website again is thepowerhour.com or text Power Hour to 22828. Together, our legacy will live on for centuries.
Spring is here, and so are your allergies. That's why we have quercetin at a 15% discount, available at thepowermall.com. Quercetin, it's a potent antioxidant to support immunity and normal allergen response. Call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Buy from the good guys. Buy from thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. 15% off quercetin this month only at thepowermall.com.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
Okay, we're back. Again, I want to reiterate the last messages there. PowerMall.com, great place for a lot of unique, high-quality products. Definitely everyone in the market for any of the sorts of things that you've heard advertised here should go there to do some shopping. I'm going to change gears here a little bit now from the election issues that we've been discussing, that I've been discussing with my guest Shane Trejo. And move on to some subjects that are a little more broad based and chronic as issues in this country. And the best lead in for that right now is the observation that the Biden administration and the Democrats in Congress have just over the course of the last 4.5 months given us a ferocious rate of inflation. And to be fair, the Trump administration did this as well with the Democratic-controlled House and the Republican-controlled Senate in 2020, in particular in that case on the basis of the COVID-19 relief bills in which trillions of dollars were injected into an economy that was not producing any wealth itself because the lockdowns had taken place and large parts of the country were essentially shut down. Enormous numbers of Americans were out of work, and we were producing no wealth to speak of. Now the Biden administration is talking about something on the order of $10 trillion of spending initiatives this year, some of them spread out over the course of the next several years, $4 trillion being just the normal federal budget for this year. That amount of expenditure is scheduled to take place. The other $6 trillion are these stimulus packages and relief bills and infrastructure bills and so forth. That's a lot of money, folks. $10 trillion. That is inflation. The amount of that stuff, that total that has been chunked out so far, a number of extra trillions of dollars over and above the normal budgetary output, has raised the amount of fiat dollars of Federal Reserve notes in circulation, and every single one of those additions to the FRNs in circulation is a diminishment in the value of all of them. So we're experiencing the inflation right now. Inflation is not the prices rising. Inflation is the devaluation of currency, which results in price rises over the course of time. So don't be fooled about that. Don't imagine that until you see the steak at the grocery store go from $5 a pound to $10 a pound, you haven't seen inflation, or the inflation hasn't happened. It has already happened. It's just there's a little bit of a catch-up period before it shows up at the market. But it'll get there. We're already seeing shortages of products. Some of those, of course, are a result of supply chains being broken because of lockdowns. We're also seeing dramatic price increases in a lot of areas. You've all probably seen or heard reports of this recently. Things like dimensional lumber being up 300%. Meat, as I used in my example, is up some percentage, 15 or 20% across the board. A lot of other products as well. So even the secondary effect outcomes are happening. Right now, the Biden administration, by virtue of paying people to not work, is compelling or providing an excuse for private industry to begin implementing what amounts to a $15 an hour wage, minimum wage, because that's what the sort of area that has to be paid just to overcome or to exceed what people are being paid to sit at home. And so a lot of businesses are beginning to make that happen, not by government fiat, but by a consequence of government activity. It's a form of fascism. This is a manner in which private industry is co-opted into being a tool of the state in accomplishing political policy. And we've seen that in a lot of different areas lately. We've seen that in the suppression of speech that is disfavored by people currently huddled behind their barbed wire enclosures in Washington. And now we're seeing it as well in this effective implementation of a higher minimum wage. There will be other areas as well. So that all brings me to the last topical item I want to get into today, and that is the fact that this week is the last week before taxes are due in the country. There having been an extension given from the normal April 15th date to May 17th. So next Monday, a week from today, is the due date for federal taxes, and I suspect that it is for all state taxes as well. And there is there's some important things that people need to know, I think, about that subject. The first times that I came to Power Hour years ago were on the basis of my research into tax law, and the conclusions that I had come to, the things that I had uncovered, and the results of those things being put into practice by eventually tens of thousands of Americans, now perhaps hundreds of thousands of Americans who, since I first published my research in 2003 in my book, Cracking the Code, The Fascinating Truth About Taxation in America, have been recovering everything taken from them or paid in by them in income taxes, which include Social Security and Medicare taxes as well, by the way. They've been getting it all back or keeping all of it in their pockets going forward by virtue of learning the true nature of the income tax in America, which is an excise tax. It's a tax on the conduct of federally taxable activity, federally excisable activity. It's not a tax on all that comes in. There's a reason why the technical term income, which is obviously so significant to the income tax, isn't actually defined in tax law. And that reason is because it serves the purposes of those who want to encourage people to misunderstand the nature of the tax when it is when they have to figure out for themselves what that term means. But the meaning of the term is clear within the law on a variety of bases, including its usage in the statutes and context, and the limitations on federal taxing power imposed by the Constitution. These things are some of the things that are covered in my work on this subject. And I want to encourage everyone to visit my website, losthorizons.com, where they can begin their own study into this really, really important subject. Now, here's a fact. Some people do taxable things. A fair chunk of Americans do taxable things. Some of them do a little bit that's taxable in the form sometimes of certain kinds of investments or the receipt of federal benefits like Social Security and so forth. These are all taxable things. Unemployment, these are taxable things. And many, many people participate in those things and have, you know, potential tax liabilities as a consequence. But those same people, for the most part, most of them, don't do taxable things as their main form of economic activity, as their main line of work, their professional activities and so forth. Most people don't. And so, although some do, maybe 15% of the population, their main line of work involves doing taxable things. But it's the other 85% that needs to understand that income doesn't mean all that comes in tax law, and the activities that they engage in are not taxable, either by the feds, the states, or local governments under the term income or under the income tax laws. So really pretty important to know this. It's especially important to know it, I think, now when we have a situation where the federal government and by extension many state governments are about to try to manage a flood of spending. Governments are very, very attuned to the idea of spending by virtue of borrowing, and in the federal government's case, by printing money, as you know, we've seen the quantitative easing and so forth that's been going on since 2008, where vast amounts vast numbers of dollars have simply been printed and dumped into circulation or dumped onto the record books, onto the balance books of banks across the country. I saw the statistic sometime late last year that in 2020 alone, 21% of all the dollars in existence were created, either actually printed or entered onto the balance books of banks across the country. That's a whole lot of dollar creation. That's a whole lot of spending. It's a whole lot of inflation, as I mentioned earlier. But it's a whole lot of spending, and although governments like to do these, they like to spend their money by means of borrowing or printing. Sorry about the noise there, folks. Sorry for that distraction. Should have disconnected that phone before we began here today. But although they like to produce the money by printing it or by borrow or come up with the wealth by borrowing, ultimately someplace the real money has to be involved. Real wealth has to be involved. Real wealth has to be taken from people who produce real wealth. And that's you and me. So knowing what can be lawfully taken and what can't is especially important to Americans right now, when there are going to be a lot of hungry governments looking to take lots of wealth from people. Now, it's important anyway. It's important in the most lean and restrained of times, but it's especially important in times like today and now. So I encourage everyone. I'm not going to get into great detail about or indeed any real further detail about the nature of the tax other than what I've already said. It's an excise tax. It applies to federal income. That includes the tax that is levied by the states, which have simply been given permission to take a piece of the federal action. That's what a state income tax is. But I want to encourage you all to go to LostHorizons.com to begin that journey of learning the truth about this subject. For 17 years now, people who have learned that truth have been recovering all of their withheld or paid in amounts, including Social Security and Medicare, totaling in the aggregate in the neighborhood of $4 or $5 billion so far. That was billion with a B, folks. And doing their part to enforce the limited element of our limited constitutional republic, because the structure of the tax law, the structure of the restraints on federal taxation, and by extension, the taxation by the states under the federal taxation rubric, is hardwired into the Constitution by the founders and the framers. They did it very deliberately. They did it with a very clear purpose. Those of you that are students of history will realize or be aware of the fact that in the Articles of Confederation, our first constitution in this country, the federal government was denied all power of taxation. When the Constitution was revised in the 1887 convention, a limited ability to tax was provided to the federal government. Now, the federal government has done, and the state governments in turn, have done everything they can do to drive that understanding out of the American consciousness, because they don't want people to understand that there are limits to that authority. They want people to think that the income means all that comes in, and that the income tax laws that they want people to think that in 1913, for some reason, our great grandparents or grandparents all had a delusional moment and threw away the restrictions that had existed on the taxing power and gave governments permission to just dip into our pockets and take whatever they want from them, like that would happen. As a matter of fact, the tax didn't begin in 1913 with the 16th Amendment. It began in 1862 during the Lincoln administration. 16th Amendment was just a way by which the American people deliberately renewed the activity of the income tax, which had been thwarted by an 1895 Supreme Court decision in Pollock versus Farmers Loan and Trust. And that by itself should tell you the truth about the matter. When the American people amend the Constitution in order to revive a tax, it is not a tax that falls in the fashion that you have been encouraged to believe the income tax falls today. No one in their right mind would do such a thing. In fact, the Constitution was amended to revive the income tax because the income tax does not fall the way you have been led to believe that it does. It's very limited. It is a tax on private profits taken from public resources by a small percentage of the population that is capable of exercising federal privileges, and that's why it was a popular tax in its time when it was understood correctly, and so popular as to prompt the amendment of the Constitution to revive it after it had been thwarted by a Supreme Court ruling. And you need to know what it really is. That knowledge will serve you very well going forward in your activities as a grown-up, responsible American citizen. It is our responsibility as American citizens to uphold and enforce the rule of law, to impose the constraints on our governments that are written in our constitutions, but which are incapable of enforcing themselves. They're just words on paper. They require the American men and women to stand up and be in charge and take responsibility for ensuring that the law is understood and is honored and respected in every quarter. So go there, please. LostHorizons.com. Learn the truth. It's a very important truth. It's a very uplifting truth. And not just because of what it will do to your bank account, but what it will do to your spirit and your sense of what it means to be an American. So, enough about that. We have a few more minutes. I want to go to a couple other things. One, you all probably saw that the news, it was not made a whole lot of, I don't think, in the mainstream, because it's a little counter-narrative. But some of you may be aware that a juror in the Derek Chauvin trial, a fellow named Brandon Mitchell, has recently been discovered or shown to have been compromised. That is, he lied in voir dire, the jury selection process, where prospective jurors are questioned to determine that they're capable of being impartial and don't go into the jury process with a predisposition or preordained view or purpose. This fellow Mitchell apparently lied in voir dire in order to get on the jury with the apparent motive of pushing for a predetermined outcome for political reasons. He's an activist. He was a guy that walked around wearing get your knee off our neck T-shirts and obviously had a purpose and said so. He said it was a form of jury nullification in a way, it kind of in reverse. So this was convicting somebody for purposes of a political position, but just as jury nullification is a valid option for a juror, but only on the basis of what the evidence shows. And in this case, this fellow apparently wasn't too concerned about the evidence. He already knew what he was going to, how he wanted to rule as a juror. As a consequence of this revelation, there's very possibly going to be a mistrial in the Derek Chauvin case. And I think it's worth people being conscious of this possibility. If it happens, it's likely to happen pretty quickly. And the question then arises is, if this happens, is it going to be used as an excuse for a renewal of the rioting and looting and menacing of mainstream American society that we saw last summer, and that went on month after month, with a great deal of destruction, and in a fashion that really met the legal definition of domestic terrorism. I think it's self-evident why this is important, because a lot of people, a lot of those listening perhaps will be the ones in harm's way potentially. So it's worth having a heads up, at least, to be on guard against that possibility and be prepared for it. It also, raises the question of why it is that these activities that took place last summer were essentially given a complete pass. In fact, not even given a pass. Many of them, I will grant that the politicians that got out and marched with many of these folks didn't participate in the burning and violence and other violence that took place, but they certainly were supportive of these activities, these protest activities, and many prosecutors across the country have declined entirely to prosecute, even on the basis of just routine property destruction charges and physical violence charges, just given a pass to all of this, as though it's just okay because we realize you were really angry and we even perhaps we think you had good reason to be angry. That neither of those things are valid considerations in the application of the law. There are a lot of things that make a lot of people angry. That doesn't give them license to act out to engage in violence, to engage in property destruction, or any of the rest of that. And in fact, the things that you're made angry about that constitute public policy issues, to like policing, like the prospect of, you know, systemic racism in policing or systemic racism in general. If that's the motivation behind your violent activity, you have crossed into the explicit definition of a domestic terrorist. And I'm going to read that definition to you. This is the definition from 18 United States Code, Section 2331. The term domestic terrorism means activities that, A, involve acts dangerous to human life that are a violation of the criminal laws of the United States or of any state, which certainly includes burning buildings down, setting police cars on fire, assaulting police officers and other people, shopkeepers and what have you. So that's A. B, appears to be intended, I, to intimidate or coerce a civilian population. II, to influence the policy of a government by intimidation or coercion. Or III, to affect the conduct of a government by mass destruction, assassination, or kidnapping. And C, occur primarily within the territorial jurisdiction of the United States. There's no question that, in my mind anyway, that the acts involved in the rioting that took place last summer was intended to intimidate or coerce a civilian population and to influence the policy of a government by intimidation or coercion. These riots were engaged in order to change policing policy in this country. It was overt. I mean, that may be a good thing that policing policy needs to be changed. It may, or you know, be changed. Maybe it needs that. I'm not getting into the question of whether it does or not, because that's irrelevant to this point. The method that was adopted for securing that change is domestic terrorism. By definition, it's illegal. And yet, I don't think that any single person involved in these acts has been even said to have engaged in domestic terrorism, much less been charged with those crimes. So that's it for me today, folks. I hope you enjoyed the show. I certainly enjoyed being here. Have a wonderful day.
Antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.